It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 575. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and staying subscribed to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. Facebook, Facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and also Facebook.com/MikeNationNet. I want to thank everybody for all of your thoughts, prayers, well wishes for my final eye surgery that was last week. That's why there was no show on Thursday. I didn't want to take a chance, even though it went really, really well. Now, for the first time in 48 years, for 48 years, I've had to wear eyeglasses. I now have no glasses except for reading. My distance vision is corrected 100%. It's been life-changing having this cataract surgery done on both eyes. I now see colors and see things so clearly that I have never seen that clearly before. And it is amazing how something bad like cataract surgery can become a positive by having the lenses corrected so I could see. Just amazing. So for the show tonight, I got a few things. Have some details on the Toronto Unconvention 2016. I'm going to go over that. We haven't posted the exact agenda yet, but we are very close. We have a really good schedule. We have good speakers lined up. There's no official sponsors that we can talk about yet. We're working very hard behind the scenes trying to get sponsors. But because we don't have the sponsors, and this is the first convention of its kind, there's a big expense. Tickets are $200. And you know what? We're not even going to break even at that. As a matter of fact, even the speakers, including myself, has to purchase a ticket for this. So all my expenses are completely out of pocket. Everybody who's going to be attending there and doing the speaking even. For this first go at this convention, if you are a computer person that is in the repair space, the business space, whether you are consulting, break fix, if you're in this business, you're going to want to attend. You're going to get something out of it. And I think it's worth it. And remember, since it's a conference, it is a tax deduction for you. So you will be able to write this off as an educational expense. I'm going to go into more details about everything surrounding the convention. You have some landing pages that I'm going to have in the show notes for you to be able to go not only purchase your ticket, but get some more information. I also want to talk about a couple nagging Windows 10 issues for my clients. I'm going to talk about email archiving, very important, and this has come up with a couple new clients. So I want to discuss exactly what is email archiving and how easy it is to add this as a service to your clients. I have a funny Siri story from Apple that I'm going to share, and we're going to talk about Amazon Glacier a little more because I've gotten a lot of email response for details that I just haven't taken the time to go into those details for you. A lot of you have been really pounding me on this. I'm going to read some emails, and I'm also going to discuss why I select what I select and talk about some of those options. So let's get started with the 2016 Toronto Unconvention. The reason why we're calling it an unconvention is there's no shilling of products. Even if we, when we have sponsors, there's going to be a separate area that you're going to go to be able to decide whether you want to hear them speak about their product or see demos. It's not going to be in your face. You will make the selection to go learn more about whatever products or sponsors that we have. You will learn from fellow techs and business owners and get real business strategies that work in the real world. You're going to discover new tech while you're there. If you're in the managed services, IT consulting, or break fix, and we put with revenue less than $2 million a year, this is the place for you. Let me tell you, I'm not even, may I someday hit that, because, and that's a long way off. So I think that's a very high number. Anyway, tickets are $200. It includes admission to the show with the genuine content and some good food on Saturday. The link I will have in the show notes for you to purchase the tickets. I think you're really going to like it. I also have a landing page that's going to talk about the hotel. It's the Holiday Inn Yorkville in Toronto. We have the rates, how much it costs for parking, the hotel website, and the phone number to make your reservations. Use the booking code IHU. The venue is the Center for Social Innovation Annex. It's just a 12-minute walk from the hotel, but I think we're going to have some cars. I know I'm driving, so I'll have a car. We can take some people. There's hot desks, Wi-Fi available at no charge, and there's fiber to the building, so we're going to have tremendous internet there. There's a Friday night social that's free, and this is, we're meeting at the Young and Blur, and we're departing, and this is at 10 p.m. sharp. It's a city tour. It's a night skate club tour of the city. If you're not into rollerblades and skates, there's bikes for rent. I'll be on a bike. I'm not going to be rollerblading. That'll be fun. And I think it ends at midnight. And then we're returning to the hotel. Saturday morning, 9:30 a.m. at the Center for Social Innovation. The details of that agenda are soon. We're going to have them in a couple weeks. We are working out the exact details. There's going to be a buzzword corn roast. I'm going to just leave that out there. You can read about that in the link that I send you. There's Ignite Talks. These are 5-minute talks that 20 slides advance every 15 seconds to get enlightened. You're going to like that. You're going to need a passport if you're coming in by air, or if you're coming in by land, an enhanced driver's license or passport is required. You're going to want a laptop. You're going to want to bring some kind of a portable device so you can follow along. There's information on getting around Toronto, restaurants, stuff near the hotel, stuff not so near to the hotel, and the details are all there for you to explore. The links are going to be in the show notes. I think you're going to enjoy this and you're going to get something out of it. If you purchase your tickets, send me an email, miketechshow@gmail.com. I want to know, because if you're coming in before Friday, I'm going to be there Monday. So I'm driving up Monday. I'm going to get in there Monday night. I'm staying Monday to Monday. If there's enough people Thursday night, we will do an informal, where I would say not related to the conference, but a Mike Tech Show meetup. And that can happen Thursday night. I will put something together for that if you can attend and if you're going to get up there. We also got all day Friday if you're up there too. So we got lots of time to get together and meet. And then the conference, it's not going to be Mike Tech Show oriented during that day. That conference is going to be very focused to IT business and growing your business, learning technologies and things that you may not have been aware of, understanding some things about the business. It's going to be wonderful. I highly recommend that you take the time and try to attend. If you have any questions, please email me. Any questions involving the convention. If I cannot answer them, I will get the answer. A funny story before we go on to some more of the content. The Cookie Monster Siri commercial by Apple. The first time I seen this, my TV's very close to my setup here in the office. And I have Hey Siri activated. And I've had it now since unactivated because of the commercial. Cookie Monster comes on and says, "Hey Siri, set a reminder for 14 minutes. And my iPhone responded to Cookie Monster and set and came and said, "I will remind you in 14 minutes. I'm looking at it. I'm like, I can't believe this. Now, later in the commercial, Cookie Monster activates his playlist for music. Well, my playlist got activated. Then he wanted a reminder of how much time was left. My Siri responded just like it did on the commercial. I can't believe this. All right. So it happens the next day. And then it happens again. Every time this commercial comes on, it's activating my phone. As a matter of fact, I had to shut it off today, the Hey Siri option. I just thought it was funny, and I wanted to share that. I wonder if that's happened to anybody else, maybe even with a different product. I know in the chat before the show, Amazon Alexa, that happens. I guess if you have an Alexa and you're seeing the commercial comes on and it wakes up Alexa and starts asking questions, does your Alexa respond? I know I don't have that. I just had to share that. I thought it was funny tech story. Let's begin with archiving email. Certain industries, like the financial industry, requires email archiving. That means every message sent to one of your users or from one of your users has to be archived behind the scenes, and then you got to be able to get to those archives. I am lucky SureWeb, with their Exchange-hosted solution, provides archiving. Now, I have not had that requirement. Even though I have a lot of financial advisors, their big corporate entity takes care of that. I've never was responsible. And then my other client that's not part of that big-name financial company, they use Smarsh and automatically had the archiving turned on. Okay. SureWeb provides archiving, and you can't purchase it when you're setting up the accounts at first. What you do when you're purchasing SureWeb, I have my client pull out their credit card, and I walk them through buying however many accounts that they want. Then I have them forward the welcome email to me, so then I can log in and do all the setups. It's at this point where you have to go to the billing section and add on archiving after that. So let's say I have a client that just signed up with me that I'm replacing. Well, I finished replacing their current IT support. They wanted to fire their IT company and have me take it over. One of the reasons was they had a hosted exchange where none of their email, they found out, was being archived. And for this particular business, that was required. So very, very interesting. As I went to take a look and looked into the archiving more at SureWeb, and it was very easy. So once I set up their email accounts, I turned that on. Now you have a special website and a special login that you can get to the archived email, but it's happening automatically. This is working out so well. Another client actually had me turn on archiving for them for a couple accounts, and you can pick and choose which accounts you want archived email or not. I wanted to mention this. It's important to have an email provider for hosted exchange services that can do the following: archiving and encryption. You may not need it today, but it could be a service that you're going to need to add later as part of a business requirement. Look at everything. for the needs of your client. And now you got two more buzzwords to ask and explain, do you need encryption? And here's how you use the example for encryption. If you're dealing with a bank and they send you an email where you then have to click and log in and register to go on a portal for a secure email, or maybe their individual financial advisor, most people have had to deal with an encrypted portal to send and receive encrypted email to somebody they're doing business with. And if that's the case, you say, is this something you may need for your clients when you're sending an email? If you are HIPAA required for compliance, you have to. You have to be able to send encrypted emails. Archiving becomes important when it comes to FINRA compliance. So there's lots of different compliances that lead to the services that you may need to tack on for hosted exchange services. And I just want to cover that to make sure everybody is aware of these services, especially if you're just starting out and you're consulting and you haven't dived into providing email support like this. You need to learn about these things. As we segue into Windows 10, and I have some emails that I want to get to, I need to describe two annoyances that's happening with a client that a couple weeks ago we did the upgrade to Windows 10. Here's one of the annoyances. This office, they all have Office 2013 Professional. This one particular user has the following problem. They have FileMaker Pro as their main app that was customized for everything that they do. And there's a script in there when they pick a user and they have a certain property, they click a button and it automatically opens up the default email client and populates it with the send to and some links and some information. And it works perfectly for four users, except for this one user, where somehow, even though the default app is Outlook 2013 desktop, it won't launch. It won't run and launch the email client and fill in the information. It would do it sometimes, but here's something we discovered. If I go in and I go to settings, first I pick Windows 10 Mail, then I pick Outlook. So I unselect Outlook, pick Mail, and then reselect Outlook. Then I go to the actual assignment of particular programs and go down to Mail To, and instead of Outlook, which is it's correct, I pick Mail, then I stop and I go back and I pick Outlook. Do you know now it works? Since I found a solution that we can replicate, we're scripting that. So before his program FileMaker Pro launches, we literally have it go through, pick the default app as Mail, go back and change it to Outlook, and then the Mail To, pick Mail, pick Outlook, and it works. I've engineered a workaround, but there's got to be something else happening behind the scenes. And I would like any kind of feedback or anything that anybody can share on this, and I will look into that. And has anybody even heard of such a thing happening with Windows 10? Here's the next one. And there's a lot out there on this topic. As a matter of fact, I talked about it a couple weeks ago. Control-C and Control-V stops working within Windows. And this is since the Windows 10 upgrade. I did everything that I talked about, which is try to load the latest keyboard driver for their keyboard, go in to Device Manager, uninstall the keyboard, reboot, have it reinstall. That works for a little bit, and then it stops working. It's sporadic. I told the one owner to go, by the way, this is the same client too, but it's a different user. I said, let's get a brand new Logitech keyboard for the user and load whatever specific drivers come with the keyboard, and let's see if this fixes it. I'm at a loss. I've tried all of the things and even the instructions that I linked to, that I thought solved the problem a couple weeks ago, well, finds out that it comes back and they have the same issue. So it's an annoyance. It's not a showstopper. It's just an annoyance. And I would love to take care of it. I have found so many unique little issues. Every new Windows 10 installation, I come across something I have never seen before. It is amazing, the list of things that I've ran into, which I've been sharing. Let's get to some emails, and we'll start with Windows 10. And this is a wireless disconnect. Very good information here. Good evening, Mike. Not sure if anyone has shared this, but since Windows 10, by the way, this is not just since Windows 10. This you can actually use in all the previous Windows operating systems. Since Windows 10 upgrade, my wireless connection was being disconnected. I noticed in Device Manager that there is a setting that allows the system to disconnect connectivity to save power. What a useless setting. But it did the trick for me. And this is from Andy. Andy, this is one of my classic tweaks that I've been doing for years and years on every computer that I touch. Not only the wireless, but if there's a regular LAN Ethernet connection, you have the same power option. I go into the advanced settings, I go to properties, click configure, and uncheck all of the power saving options when I'm touching a computer for the first time. As a matter of fact, my son has that on his tweak list. And we do that when we're also tweaking the power options, where it's always balanced. When you buy a new computer, no, we want maximum performance. I don't want the hard drive to ever turn off. I'm glad you found that answer, and I couldn't wait to read this because this is a great tweak that you can implement on every computer that you come in contact with. This is from Roger. I need to enlist your help or one of your listeners. At some point, Windows 10 decided to attach a picture to my login screen. Not lock screen, but login screen. Unfortunately, this was not one of my wife or even my son's, but a picture I took of a hard drive serial number. So now, every time I reboot my system, I am greeted by a picture of the hard drive. When I click on it, I then get to the login screen. And this login screen is normal. I have Googled multiple times over the past several months trying to solve this, but everything out there is about the actual login screen and how to change it. There appears to be nothing about a picture right before clicking on the login screen. If you know anything about this, or perhaps if your listeners do, could you please put that out there? And just to make it fully clear, going into personalization, lock screen, and turning off, show Windows background picture on the sign-in screen has no effect on this issue. Only the actual login screen. My issue is right before that. Thanks for the assistance. When time allows, and as always, good show. Roger, good question, and I'm glad you emphasized that because when I first started reading this, that's exactly where I was going to send you. So clearly, Roger has an issue, and that setting is not fixing it. Got to be some kind of a registry entry or something here where we can change that picture before he's presented with the login screen. Or why is it not taking? Now, silly question here. When you're making that change, are you the local administrator? I know you probably are, Roger, but I just want to make sure that you are when you're making that change. And if you do change it, does the change stick? You know, it's interesting where that option that he goes to is supposed to fix that. But then so is the default app for my client for email, and it doesn't work. Very interesting here where I see settings that are supposed to keep and supposed to stay, but they don't. So more on our favorite topic, Windows 10. Terry from Arizona here. A friend upgraded to Windows 10 from Windows 7. After a while, he had problems with a video driver. I checked for Windows 10 drivers for his Dell computer on the Dell website and found that Dell has no Windows 10 drivers for his computer. I went to the Intel site and Intel does not have Windows 10 drivers for his Clarksdale i3 processor computer. I tried reinstalling Windows 7 with a Dell Restore Disk. That did not work. I had to boot with the Restore Disk, go to a command prompt, and then use this part to clean and reformat the drive. After that, Windows 7 reinstalled. After I did all the Windows 7 updates, I checked the upgrade status for Windows 10 with that control panel Microsoft installs. When I checked the Windows 10 upgrade status from Microsoft, it said no report was available. Microsoft is pushing Windows 10 to computers where the manufacturer has no Windows 10 drivers, and Microsoft has no report that shows the computer is compatible with Windows 10. No wonder some people are having problems with the upgrades to Windows 10. Thanks again for a terrific show. Terry, this is exactly what I've been seeing, and it's computers that are not capable of Windows 10, yet Microsoft is going to shove it down their throats and push it there whether they're compatible or not, and it's going to cause a real technical support headache. I just wanted to commend you on a great show and offer a tip regarding blocking Windows 10 from downloading and displaying notifications. There is no need to install GWX control panel because there is a Microsoft sanctioned method of blocking it for good by simply editing a few registry keys. Stop right there. Editing a few registry keys takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. I know you can build it and you can merge it. That GWX control panel is so easy to use. I find it very difficult to try anything else, but I'm going to continue here. I've done this on multiple systems and it works great for me. The website with Microsoft instructions are here, and I'm going to link it to the Knowledge Base article. Alternately, I have found it easier to have a .reg file that I keep on my flash drive with the appropriate registry key changes in it. This means that I can fix this on a computer in a couple of seconds. You run the .reg file and reboot, done. You know, it only takes a few seconds for the GWX control panel, and I don't install that. I run that also from my flash drive. I think there's a little more going on there in the GWX control panel where you can suppress the icon. You can suppress the registry settings that you have here. I have done that on a system that's still got Windows 10. So just to put it out there, Microsoft's getting very, very clever and hiding the upgrade in the guise of another security update with a different knowledge base number. Be careful. Want to talk about Amazon Glacier. This is from Tim. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is these emails contain information that I didn't explore or take the time to really get into. Because when I talk about a solution, you have to vet it a little bit. Yes, I do some vetting, but if I talk about a product, you need to also do some due diligence on your own and follow up with it to learn about it. All solutions are not the same for all clients. When I talked about Amazon Glacier, these, and I should have maybe said this, they're for clients that have no budget for any cloud backup. So anything more expensive than Amazon Glacier was not happening. And rather than have them not have a backup in the cloud for disaster recovery, I would rather at least have it for Amazon Glacier. And I didn't add that statement when I was talking about it. So I wanted to make that clear. When I'm talking about solutions, you can't apply it to all clients because I have clients that have to have S3. Of course, they need different versions. And I'm using Vault America version control for some clients. That's hundreds of dollars per month. But they need to maintain different versions of their files. I get it. Clients that have the budget, I'm going to accommodate them with a technical solution that's going to match what they want to do. This is the way I understand Glacier Archive. If I am wrong, let me know. I heard about Amazon Glacier in your podcast, so I decided to investigate it. Amazon Glacier does not have versioning like S3. So if you upload contaminated or crypto-walled encrypted data up to the archive, it would destroy those files. So in order to protect your data from that, you would have to create manually separate vaults and do your own versioning and hope that you would find out about the corrupted data before five days have passed if you did 5 days of versioning. That makes sense. I have clients that cannot afford that and won't budget that money, even given the dire consequences. If you created 5 vaults, one for each day of the week, and you had 1 terabyte of data, you would have to buy 5 terabytes of storage, still cheap. Well, not really. That's like $50 a month versus $10 a month. From a budgetary reason, I know that sounds reasonable, but I have clients that's an issue. Then you would have to set up your backups to back up one for each day. But if you didn't detect a crypto virus until 7 days later, all your data is corrupt. I think that would be very hard to not detect a crypto virus within 7 days. You're going to find out in a day or two that you can't access your files. Another question, how much does it cost to delete? There is a prorated charge of 0.021 per gigabyte for items deleted prior to 90-day storage. It is cheap storage, but I don't think it is a good backup solution for everyday backup. However, if you just want a baseline archive snapshot of your data and maybe drive images, it is great. You can use CrashPlan Pro and get automatic versioning for a whole year for $10 a month, unlimited data. Other good, inexpensive backup solutions are iDrive, which is HIPAA compliant, at iDrive.com. iDrive maintains up to 10 versions of all the files in your account. LiveDrive, not HIPAA compliant, but cheaper. LiveDrive gives you 30 file versioning. You can resell LiveDrive and iDrive, but not CrashPlan. Thanks for the great podcast, Tim. Thank you for those options. And it's important that you hear about all those options, including Amazon's S3. And you have to take a look at all of the features, what they're offering, have an idea of the total size of your client's data, and then do the math and see where does it make sense. What's their budget? What kind of compliance do you need? Is it FINRA, HIPAA, etc.? You must do the due diligence in following up on all of these things. This is from Zrinko. On the most recent episode, you mentioned Amazon Glacier for a great low-cost storage option. While I don't use the service myself, I am aware that often people focus on the low storage costs and overlook the retrieval costs associated with using the service. He has a link to the Amazon Glacier retrieval pricing catalog, and I'm going to link that. Anyway, it's a calculator to calculate if you had to retrieve everything, how much it's going to cost you. Anyway, I found this useful calculator that allows users to quickly and easily figure out total Amazon Glacier costs based on how they use the archive. Feel free to read this email or post the link in the show notes if you think others might find this information useful. Thank you. Absolutely. I think all of you are going to find this useful as you investigate cloud backup storage for your clients or yourself. This is from Roger. Hi, Mike. So I was just listening to last week's show when you read an email from a listener. He stated that Malwarebytes was warning about the top result listed on his search for driverupdate.net. I don't know if it was driverupdate.net. It was Slim Drivers. I could be wrong. And was blocking access to it. You mentioned Woot as a deterrent for visiting malicious sites as well. I'm writing to you because I have both Woot and Malwarebytes installed. And when I do the same search, Woot is all green and Malwarebytes gives no warnings nor blocks anything. I know you have both. So what is your experience with this? This leads me to wonder
if this other individual is compromised in any way since he is getting the top link to a malware site. Ooh, I've had that happen. Or if something is not configured right on my system, and perhaps I have the issue since there are no warnings from either program. I'm not sure. Mileage varies. You know, there's times when, and this doesn't happen all the time, Amazon says it, but you know, I've searched for a product on Amazon, got a cost, let's say it's $10. Later that day, maybe even an hour later, did the same search, and it's $11. Everything changes so quickly. It's so dynamic that the best thing to do is you have Woot. Woot's going to do the best that it can. Is it the perfect answer? No, nothing's perfect. Have the latest, greatest malware bytes and have it updated. Have the latest, have your antivirus totally updated. There comes a point where you have to apply common sense. But you're right. If that top pick that you searched, is there a chance you can click on that? Yes. Last year, Philly.com, which is one of the biggest websites in this area, in the Philadelphia area, they did not vet an ad and the code around an ad on their front page. And everybody who visited that site that day for a few hours was automatically infected. You can only do so much. You have to apply common sense and make sure you have everything running the latest, greatest. Every, at least once a week, I run JRT, Adware Cleaner, Rogue Killer, and CCleaner. I run that every week as a, on a regular basis just to keep my system clean. Some weeks it finds nothing. Others it finds, oh my, I'm like, where did this come from? Where did I go? I didn't do anything really different that week, but a whole bunch of things entered into my Firefox browser that it cleaned up. I don't have an answer for you, Roger, on this. You just have to apply the best that you can and keep everything updated. This is from Jason. Last week, he sent me the email about the driver program, and I asked for the link, and he sent the link, and I'm going to put it in the show notes. Please be careful going to this. https://index.htm. This is where the driver's utilities that he talked about. But I did receive two more emails with that same link. So it is a legitimate link. But you still got to be careful because the Slim Driver utilities that we talked about has since been compromised with more malware being installed when you install the program. I'm seeing this where a program one week is clean and the next week it's not. I try my best on the show to give you the latest information, but even then, it's out of date. A day or two can make a program that I link completely bad, where now they've added malware to it. It's a shame. So that's why you got to heed to what I said. Keep your antivirus updated. Keep your malware bytes updated. Have Woot and AdBlocker Plus in all of your browsers. And keep your system up to date. That's the best advice you could ever give anyone. And with that, you should probably, you're going to, you know, your system's going to stay pretty clean. I've been very, very fortunate. And trust me, I'm testing out things and I'm going places I shouldn't be going. And it's just amazing how I have, and now that I said this, my system's going to be horribly infected tonight or tomorrow. But I've stayed pretty much clean, even going to all these infected sites. That's it for tonight's show. I hope you had a good time. Hope you learned something. I ask that you use my Amazon link. If you are purchasing anything from Amazon or know anybody that purchases from Amazon, use the link amazon.micnation.net. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back to support the show. It makes a big difference. I really appreciate it. And I thank all of you who use my link, amazon.micnation.net. That's it for tonight's show. I'll see everybody next week, same time, same channel. And for those of you that are celebrating,
Have a happy Easter. Have a safe and happy holiday with your family. And I intend to, I know there'll be a, I think there's an Easter egg hunt scheduled at my house on Saturday with my grandkids. And I'm looking forward to spending Sunday with my grandkids and family. Everybody, if you're celebrating Easter, enjoy the holiday. And remember, if you are thinking of attending the Unconference in Toronto 2016, July 22nd to the 24th, I will prominently have the link for you to purchase the tickets and also a landing page on my site that'll give you more information. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.